Good morning. Thank you so much for allowing us to come and share with you what God has done in our life over the past 10 years. We serve a mighty and awesome God, and we have proved him time and time again over the past 10 years that he is faithful every single time. I love seeing young people in church. It tugs on my heart, but when God first called me to go to the mission field, I did not want to do it. It was just not part of the plan for my life. You see, I grew up in the country of Jordan. Anybody know where that's at? Iraq, Israel, Jordan's right in the middle of those two countries. And I grew up there for 16 years of my life. And as a little girl, 5 years old, I had planned on proving to all those Middle Eastern men that if they can do something, I can do it 10 times better. And so ever since I was 5 years old, I was going to be a famous heart surgeon, make lots of money, travel the world, and drive a red Corvette convertible. And so where's the best place to study medicine? The United States. So when I was a junior in high school, my dad sent us back to live with my grandparents, and I attended a Bible school in Ohio. And in my junior year, the Lord said to me in a camp meeting, he said, "Hannah, would you be willing to be a missionary?" And I got up from that service, went to my cabin, and I started a year-long struggle between my will and God's will. And it was the most miserable year that I had lived in all my life. The next year, I was a senior in high school, and we had revival service at the Bible college. And the Lord said to me, "Hannah, you either give me your all or you will lose everything." And I'm so thankful to tell you this morning, I said, "Lord, if you want me to go to the mission field tomorrow, that's exactly what I'm willing to do." Obviously, he didn't send me the mission field the very next day, but I said to myself, you know what? I need to prepare myself for this mission thing. And in my young mind, and the devil likes to always put doubts in our mind, and in my young mind, I thought, you know what? The Lord's going to send me to the hottest country on the planet because I hate the heat. So I need to prepare myself for this. So I would get in my car, I would roll up my window and see how far I can drive with the air conditioning off before I would suffocate. And the Lord said, "That's not how I need you to prepare. I need you to go to Bible college." And he led me to Penn View. I don't know if any of you know, it's just 10 minutes up the hill here. And you know, the Lord said, "That's where I want you to go." And so I packed up my bags and came to Penn View where I met Eric. And it has been an adventure ever since. I've been places I never thought I would go. Got to travel. I've met people I never thought I would meet. And he's even allowed me to drive a red Corvette convertible one time. And so the devil sometimes like to discourage young people and say, if you're going to follow God, you're going to be so miserable, you won't get to do any of the fun stuff. But I've proved the devil to be wrong, and I proved Jesus to be true. When I was preparing to be a missionary, I would read biographies of great missionaries of days past. And I was like, man, look at all these awesome miracles that God did in their life. And I would think, but that would never happen to me. Well, over the past 10 years, I've proved him that he would do it for me as well. Just several months ago, before coming home on deputation, we were driving through Guatemala, and on the way to the retreat, I had my backpack with me, and I had all our money in that backpack. And you know, I thought to myself, if anybody's going to rob Eric, and he'll later tell you a story about that, but if anybody's going to rob Eric, if anybody's going to rob us, it's going to be Eric first. And so I thought, it's better if I keep the money with me. So I had all our retreat money, everything that we needed, all our travel money in that backpack. And so we were on our way. We were probably about an hour and a half away from the retreat center when we stopped at a gas station, and I took my little boy into the bathroom, and I was getting him ready, and I laid my backpack there in the bathroom, and I turned around, washed my hands, and walked out and left it there in the bathroom. Now, Guatemala, if anybody knows about Guatemala, it's not the safest country. You know, things get stolen all the time. And so we went on to the retreat center. When we got there, I get out of the van, and I'm like, where's my backpack? And we searched everywhere. It wasn't in there, and it dawned on me. I left it in the restroom there an hour and a half away. And God worked out all the details. And at the retreat, the lady that owns the retreat center comes out. She's like, "What's wrong?" And I told her the story. And she said, "Was it such and such a gas station?" And I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "We know the owners of that gas station. What are the chances, right?" And so she calls them up. They're like, "Oh, we're on our way over to the retreat center. We'll just stop by and see if it's still there." Well, to make a very long story short, they called back and they said three people had gone into that bathroom. And the third lady that came out gave the backpack to the people working there. We don't know if anything's taken from it or whatever. But the next day, they brought the backpack to me, and I opened it up, and every penny was in that backpack. You know, somebody said, well, you know, people were afraid to take it out because there were cameras everywhere, but they could have opened it up inside the restroom and they could have taken anything, but God protected that backpack. And before they brought the backpack to me, my little boy, he's like, Mom, I'm really praying for that backpack. And he was really praying for it. And so I'm so thankful that God did it for me as well, just like he did it for Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and all those great missionaries. He performed miracles in their lives, but he's also performing it in my life. And if we trust Jesus with all our heart, he can do it as well in your life. So thank you again for allowing us to come and share with you. I love the Lord with all my heart, and please continue to pray for us.
It's certainly good to be back in Mifflinburg, and thank you for coming to this missionary service. We are the Coons family. Our two little boys are not with us this morning. Our youngest is not feeling well at all. Pray for Daniel. But Joseph is 10 years old. Daniel's 5 years old. God is blessing their lives. We thank them. We thank God for them and how he's been using them. But we've been working with Hope International Missions in the country of Honduras. And it's hard to believe, but we've been there 10 years. 8 million people live in the country of Honduras, and there's two major cities. The first is San Pedro Sula on the northern coast. There's about 1 million people in that city. And to the south is Tegucigalpa, the capital city. When we first signed up with Hope International Missions, we went with the plan of church planting. That was our passion. And the mission had a church in San Pedro Sula, and it had been started by nationals. They were already working in that city. So we focused on the capital city towards the south there in Tegucigalpa. And so we landed in March 2006 and began working in a language school, studying Spanish. We found an apartment. We started spreading the word around our community that we were there to plant a church. And over several months, over lots of praying and fasting and God moving, one Sunday morning, we had 14 people coming to our living room for a service. That group started our very first church, and they started bringing in their friends and relatives and so forth, and the word began to spread. A lady from that congregation invited us to another part of the city called Las Uvas. And she said, you know, I know a lot of people there. There's no church for them to attend. Would you come and help us start a work in Las Uvas? And so we did. Saturdays, we went to Las Uvas, and we would set chairs up out in the open air, out on the yard. And the very first service that we held, there was nearly 50 people that came out on the yard to hear the gospel. Later, that lady donated some property in Las Uvas, and we were able to build a little one-room building there for that congregation. So we were pastoring two churches. God was working and moving. And during that time, we had a little retreat kind of for couples. And one of the couples that got invited was a couple by the name of Roberto and Jenny. They needed God desperately in their lives. Their marriage was falling apart. And they came to get some help, and they liked our church and started coming faithfully to the services, and God began to work in their lives. But one Sunday morning, Roberto's father came from a little village out in a place called Las Delicias, an hour and a half outside of the city. He came with Roberto to church, and after the sermon and the message and things, he came to me and he said, you know, Pastor, he said, in my village, we don't have any church. And he said, I have been praying since my conversion in a tent meeting 17 years ago. I've been praying that somebody would come and start a work in our village. Could you come and help us? And we were busy with two churches as it was, and here was an offer for a third. And I said, brother, I don't know how much we can help, but we will certainly try to do something. And long story short, we got a church started there in Las Delicias. We got it built, made out of adobe, the blue building that you see there. Next to it, we built a parsonage. And it was exciting to have the very first church in that village and to see people from all around begin to come. During that time, Roberto got saved and gave his heart and life to Jesus Christ. His wife, Jenny, got saved. They got baptized, began to serve in the church. And it was amazing to stand back and watch God change their lives. 3 years ago, we came on deputation and went back to Honduras. And when we got back, Roberto and Jenny were waiting for us. They said, we feel God is calling us to go pastor the church in Las Delicias, where Roberto grew up. And he resigned his job. They made their move out there, and God began to bless their ministry. And many of his family live in that village. Cousins, aunts, uncles, many of them started coming to church. They knew Roberto as a teenager. He had been rebellious. He had a lot of bitterness and hatred in his life. And he actually ran away from home at 17 and went to Tegucigalpa. And now, years later, as a brand new convert serving God, he was coming back to pastor the church, and they saw the change in his life. They saw the hardness, the bitterness melt into love and forgiveness. And many of those people begin to come to Christ. The Lord has been blessing their ministry. His oldest brother, Tito, and his family have been saved recently. Young people like Felipe in that village gave their hearts to Christ. There's a little store down the road where Roberto's uncle has a little convenience store. And his uncle's not a Christian. And he started selling beer in his store. And lots of guys would come to the store and get drunk. And they'd have little groups there in front of the store. And then they would walk down the street together and come into the church. And it would be loud and boisterous. And in the middle of the sermon, middle of the service, they would come in and interrupt the service. This happened time and time again. And Roberto was getting frustrated with this happening all the time. And he called his congregation together. And he said, we've got to do something about this. We're not having good services because so many drunks are interrupting our services. What can we do? And the people started talking about it. And they said, you know, it's your uncle that's the problem. He started selling alcohol in his store. And that's why all these guys are coming into our village now and interrupting our services. You need to report him to the police. He doesn't even have permits to sell that stuff. And he could be in big trouble, and that would just solve this whole problem. Well, Roberto said, I can't do that. He's my uncle. And if he heard that I reported him to the police, that would start a family feud. And he would never come to church and get saved. No, he said, the only thing I know to do is as a church, we fast and pray that God takes care of this problem. And that's exactly what the church did. They hit their knees, and for about 2 weeks, they were fasting and praying. And a little while later, a man came to the store and got drunk. And that man's wife came looking for him and found him there in front of the store. And she was upset. She got a hold of Roberto's uncle and, really worked up. You know, why are you selling this stuff? Look at my husband. Look at these men wasting their lives, wasting our money. There's families to take care. She was so worked up, she called the police. And a patrol comes to the store. And meanwhile, his uncle's out back dumping things down the drain, trying to cover up evidence. And they caught him. And they said, listen, you're not allowed to sell this here. And we're going to give you a warning this time, but next time it's going to be jail. And they literally prayed out alcohol sales in that store. Isn't that exciting? How God still answers prayer. He's still on the throne. And they were so excited. Roberto called me and told me the good news and how God was working. And it was such an encouragement to their church. We thank God for how he's working there. Las Uvas Church, God is blessing there as well. We have a little building that we use, and one of Hannah's ministries is working with children. She has Sunday school and classes with them, and she wanted to start a Sunday school in Las Uvas, but we didn't have the space to do it until a group from Pennsylvania came, and they built that little wooden building that you see there on the upper end of our church property, and that has become our Sunday school room. And Hannah started classes, and kids from all around Las Uvas started coming in to hear the gospel, and they were excited. These were some of the children that started coming, this group right here. And these children right here gave their hearts to God, and they were faithful every service they were there. You talk about having fun in Sunday school. It was fun to teach them because they loved being taught. And it wasn't long until their mother, Norma, started coming to church with them. And, you know, they don't look it in this picture, but they are very, very poor. It's a very poor family. They live in a metal shack about 12 foot by 12 foot. All of them live in that little shack. And on Sundays, we pull the van up in front of their house. And those girls come around dressed in their Sunday best with their Bibles under their arms. And they pile in the van, and Norma gets in right behind them. And there's been times I've looked up behind the house, and there was Pablo, their dad. He would be swinging away in a hammock with a beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other hand, proud to death that he was sending his family to church, but he wasn't going. He wasn't interested. He had other things to do. But I tell you, those kids started praying for their daddy, and Norma gave her heart to God, and Pablo began to see the change in their lives, and it made him hungry. Made him hungry for God. He was sick and tired of the sin he was living in. He was sick and tired of the vices that had control of his life. And he wanted something to fill the void in his heart. He showed up to church a few times, kind of hit and miss, and started listening and started tuning in to the messages. And it wasn't long, under heavy conviction, he found his way to the altar and began to weep and pray and ask God to change his life. And he did. It wasn't long until the smoking stopped, the drinking stopped, and the beatings stopped. Norma came to church and she stood and testified. She's a very timid lady, very quiet, and she normally doesn't speak in public, but she couldn't hold the joy back any longer. She had to thank God. She stood and testified and said, "I thank God for the change in Pablo's life. You know, before, when he would get drunk, he would come home and beat me. But now, since Jesus is in his heart and life, he doesn't beat me anymore." Isn't that exciting? And it's just been awesome to see the change in this entire family as they're now serving God together in the church. Hannah also started a women's ministry. And many of our ladies that attend our services are single mothers. Some are married to alcoholic husbands. They're in some very tough situations. And Hannah's been there to give them encouragement and strength. And she'll often have meetings with the ladies in our home and have lessons and encouragement. She's been more than just a pastor's wife. She's been a friend to these ladies. And she wanted to have a ladies' retreat. We didn't have the funds to do that. But we got a call from another organization. They said, "We have a women's retreat planned for this year, and we'd like to invite your church ladies to come." And Hannah jumped on the opportunity. She took about seven ladies up into the mountains to the retreat. It was a five-hour drive. And she got up there, and it was dirt roads where she was going, and it had been raining for about 2 weeks straight. And those dirt roads had turned to mud. And she got to a place where she had to climb a hill, and the tires began to spin, mud's flying everywhere, and she couldn't make it up the hill. And by this time, it's getting dark, and the ladies are getting nervous, you know, and it's still another hour to get to the retreat, and they're up in the mountains. And so Hannah pulled off to the side of the road, and she called me on her cell phone. She said, "Eric, what am I supposed to do? I can't get up this hill. We have tried, and it's just too much mud." And I said, "Well, I can call the missionary at the retreat. He can come and help you guys, but it's going to be another hour at least." And she said, "Well, you pray, and I'm going to hang up, and I'm going to try one more time to get up this hill. Help us pray." I hung up. I started praying. She hung up, and she got her ladies together in that car, and they started praying. I mean, it's getting dark. It's about 6 in the evening. There's nobody around to help. And they lift the roof off that car praying, and, "Lord, get us out of here." After they finished the prayer, she put the pedal down and tried her best to get up that hill. And they were fishtailing, you know, and spinning. And you know, those ladies declare that they could literally feel an angel pick up the back of the car and move it to where they could get traction, and they made it safely up that hill and onto the retreat and had a wonderful retreat. And those ladies came back and they couldn't stop talking about that moment when God heard their prayers and moved the car and got them out of that situation. Isn't that awesome? God is an amazing God. He hears our prayers and he's with us in all circumstances. That was just such an encouragement to those ladies. And the following year, Hannah had her own retreat there, and you can see the group of the ladies from the four HIM churches that we're working with meeting together. God blessed that time in an amazing, amazing way. We started a new ministry last year in the National Penitentiary. Some men from Las Uvas had gotten arrested and sent to the prison, and I wanted to go in and visit with them. I'd never been in the penitentiary before, and I was scared to death. Honduras has so many street gangs. They have MS-13, Gang 18. These are vicious gangs that kill each other. And I knew the prison was filled with gang members. And I didn't know how safe it was for a white boy like me to be in the middle of all that, you know. And I went in with fear and trembling. And I found out it was one of the safest places you can visit in Honduras. It operates like a gang inside the prison. You see the dormitory that's there in the zone that I go to. There's several of these dormitories. And each wing of that of those dormitories has what they call a boss. And he's over about 30 or so guys. And he's basically the gang leader. And everybody has to do what he tells them to do. If they want any privileges, they pay the boss. And one of the unwritten rules in prison is that nobody dare touch a visitor. If you touch a visitor, if you steal, if you mess with somebody that comes here, you will be dealt with. And it may mean your life. And nobody touches a visitor. I tell you, I go in there, hey, pastor, hey. And no one messes with you. Just a stone's throw from that dormitory, you see in that picture, I discovered a little church in there. Some converted prisoners were meeting for services. And they heard I was a missionary, and they said, we'd like for you to come and preach to us when you come and visit. And so Saturdays I'd get in there, and there's about 100 guys, and it was awesome. It was awesome to be able to preach the gospel to them and see 15, 20 come to the front at the end of the message and pray and weep and seek God. And they wanted Bible studies, and so we started a Bible study in the book of Galatians, verse by verse, chapter by chapter. They loved it. They said, when you come back from this tour in the United States, we want more Bible study. It's been exciting. Been able to meet Americans in prison there and try to be a light to them as well, an encouragement. It's just been a great, great opportunity. Pray especially for that ministry that God would help and bless. We're excited about some new missionaries coming to help us next year. Wesley and Jana and little Ella Cressman have heard God call them, and they'll be ministering with us as a team ministry there in Tegucigalpa. Their focus will be on education, helping people who are illiterate, helping train our people, and starting a Bible college and training pastors and all the education things that they'll be involved in that. We're excited about that. Pablo is a young man from one of our churches. He feels God calling him to be a missionary. Isn't that exciting? And he just finished 2 years training in a missionary school in Nicaragua and has a burden to minister among Muslims. So pray for these new workers that God would bless and encourage them. Keep us in your prayers daily as we live in a very dangerous, dangerous place. These are kind of the scenes that happen every day in Honduras. Matter of fact, the orange building there is a restaurant. Right in front of the airport, there's a little restaurant there, and we love it. It's kind of fried, grilled meat and refried beans and rice and stuff. And we had a gentleman come down and visit back last August, and we decided to take him out for supper, and we had all intentions of taking him to this restaurant one evening. But for lunch that day, we had eaten almost the same kind of food, so we thought, well, we'll go about a block down the street and get some pizza. While we were eating pizza, armed men showed up at that restaurant, shot the guard that was standing at the door, threw the doors open and said, where's our money? And they killed the man who was behind the grill that night and ran out the door. We would have been in that restaurant during that shooting God moved us just a block down the road, kept his hand upon us. Here the gangs had been asking for money at the store, and the store had been refusing to pay, and they came to collect that night, and a man was killed. But thank God for his protection upon our family. You can see the picture of our car, the end of our car. There's a bullet hole through the trunk of our car. I have no idea how that happened. But one Sunday morning, I came out and got ready for church and opened the door and looked, and there was a big old bullet hole in our trunk. And thank God again for his protection. And the other picture that you see there, the road that goes through Las Uvas there at our second church, at the end of that dirt road is a large entrance to a cemetery. There's really hardly anybody that lives back there. There's a family that comes to our church that lives just a few yards from that cemetery entrance. And one evening I took that family back there, dropped them off, and turned around in front of their house and started heading back out that dirt road. This is about 9 o'clock at night. All of a sudden, some car lights turn on, and a car comes flying up behind my van and got right on our bumper. And I thought, this is really odd. No one back here has vehicles, and, you know, what's going on? And I pulled off to the side to let this guy go around, and he went flying by. And I pulled the van back on the road, but what I didn't realize, there was a second car behind that one with no lights on. And when I turned back on the road, I nearly hit that second car as he was going by. And I thought, wow, this is really strange. What in the world is going on back here? Found out the next day in the news that they had just executed two young men in front of that cemetery that night. And here they were getting away from the crime scene, and I nearly hit them. Had I hit those guys, they probably would have felt obligated to kill me as an eyewitness to their crime. But thank God it didn't happen. The Lord has protected us so many times, and I thank him for it. Two Decembers ago, Roberto and Jenny, their two little girls, and myself, we were in our church van headed to Guatemala City. Every year in Guatemala City, we have a pastor's retreat. Pastors from Mexico, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Honduras, we meet there for several days. And we were about 45 minutes from our destination going through a mountain pass. And it was getting dark. We were happily going down the road when all of a sudden I look out my side window, and there next to our car was a Toyota Hilux police car with four police officers in uniform with 9mm handguns pointed at our window. And they were so close to our van, they were actually slamming the side of our van, telling us to pull off and stop. I quick stopped the van, and those four guys jumped out of the back. Two opened the sliding door of our van and came in and sat in the back of our van, and two came in the front doors. And as he opens the door and flashes a 9mm handgun in my face telling us to get out and get in the back of the van, I'm crawling over the arm of the seat, and I'm yelling. I'm saying, guys, I said, don't kill us. Don't shoot. I said, we got two little girls here in the van. I said, we're missionaries. We're pastors. Don't kill us. He rammed me with his elbow and told me to get out of the seat. And we all lined up in the first bench of the van. And we started down the highway. And as we did, I started praying out loud. I said, dear Jesus, I said, please protect us. Send your angels right now. Don't let these men hurt us. Please keep your hand upon us. People had told me different times that gang members and corrupt individuals like that had a certain fear of God, certain fear of killing Christians because they feared God's wrath. And I wanted to put all the fear of God in them that I could. And I'm praying out loud, and I'm telling you, we're Christians, we're pastors. And as I was praying, we're heading down the road, the man in the passenger seat looks back at me and he says, shut up. He said, put your head down and don't look at us and do everything we tell you to do. I quieted down, put my head down, continued to pray. We're flying down the highway so fast that as we're going around curves, the wheels are squealing. I thought for sure we would flip the van. We'd crash right there in the highway. The driver looks in the mirror at us and he said, don't worry, guys. He said, we're police officers. And they were on duty. He said, we got a call when you crossed the Honduran-Guatemalan border that you were carrying drugs in this van and we won't inspect it. Just do everything we tell you to do. We went flying down the road, and the other guy gets on his cell phone, starts looking in his mirror as a car pulls in behind our van. And he's telling him to flick your lights. And the guy's flicking his lights, letting him know that he's in place behind the van. Same as the car pulls in front, he begins flicking the lights at them and communicating. There was at least two cars behind in front. And all of a sudden, the driver starts slowing down, and he and the other man start whispering together. I think it's around here somewhere, yeah. And they're looking out the window until they finally spotted a dirt road that cut off the side of the highway and up into the woods. He jerked the van off, and we plowed down and went over a little picket fence at the end of the road and went up into the woods, and he parked on a hill up in the woods. By this time, it was dark. The two men in the back open the sliding door, and they get out with their guns, and they start guarding the road. And the two drivers come around, they look in at us, and they said, "All right, guys, you're going to get out one by one. You're going to empty everything in your pockets, put everything on the floor of the van, and sit down here at the edge of the road and put your head between your knees. And we want you to get out first." And they pointed at me. I crawl over everybody, and I stand up, and I start emptying my pockets and taking off my watch and my cell phone. And while I'm doing so, I'm pleading with these guys. I said, "Please don't kill us." I said, "There's two little girls sitting right here. And I've got two little boys back in Honduras." I said, "We're missionaries. We're pastors. You can take whatever you want. You can take this van if you want. Please just spare our lives." They lined us up at the edge of the road, and our heads were down between our knees. And they started pulling out our bags and opening the glove compartment, looking through the van, taking everything they wanted to take. And as we sat there in the silence of that woods, I began to think about a lot of things. When you're facing death, the only thing that matters is that you're right with God. And I began to pray and search my heart, and I said, "Lord, if there is anything in my heart that needs forgiven, if there is anything, please show me right now. This is going to be my last day on earth." They don't leave witnesses. And as I prayed, I can't even explain to you, but it was like God literally stepped into the woods and stood right next to me and put his hand on my head and let me know that he was in control. And I began to search my heart for any sin, for anything I knew would grieve God. And you know, I couldn't find anything that night. Thank God, I had a clear conscience. There wasn't anything that I had regrets for. There wasn't anything I wish I'd apologized for before I left on this trip. I knew that my name was written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and I was ready to die. That's a wonderful feeling to know you're ready to die. Are you ready to die this morning? We have no idea when our day will be. And I thought for sure that was my night. And I said, "Lord, search my heart if there's anything." And the Lord began to give me assurance and let me know that everything had been forgiven. It was covered by the blood. If they put a bullet through my head that night, I was going straight to heaven. I knew Jesus was my Savior. And the Lord began to give me verses. One of the very first verses was a verse he gave me when I was 13, when he called me to be a missionary. "Yea, I am with you always, even to the end of the world." I clung to that promise. And next he gave me parts of Psalms 23. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies." And it was like I could see a table, a spiritual table. And I had my name in the Lamb's Book of Life there. There was a crown of life. There was peace in my heart. And I had forgiveness of my sins. And those were things those thieves could never take, could never touch. They finished going through some things and they found a little mini iPad that I had. Had my passport, they knew my name. And he came and he said, "Eric," he said, I want the code to this iPad and the debit cards that he found in my wallet." And I started giving him the codes. And I felt like I needed to do something to try to bond with this guy, make it hard for him to kill us. And I started witnessing to him. I said, "I just want you to know," I said, "God loves you. And he died on the cross for your sins. And he can forgive you and change your life. You don't have to live this kind of life and do these kind of things. There's a better way, serving Jesus." And I began to witness a little to him. He hung on to every word I had to say with interest. Matter of fact, he started speaking in broken English to me. And when he did that, the other man got upset and he told us to stop speaking in English. And we went back into Spanish again. And I pleaded with him. I said, please don't kill us. Don't do it. I got two little boys. He looked at me and he said, you're a Christian, right? I said, absolutely. He said, you're still worldly minded. He said, I said, what? He said, you're still worldly minded. You're afraid to die. You shouldn't be afraid to die. For you to die is gain. If I kill you, you gain everything. He starts preaching at me. I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. And I said, I am ready to die. And I apologize for showing any fear. He patted me on the shoulder. He said, that's okay. He said, I understand. He said, just do everything I tell you to do and it should be all right. He went back and his buddy and he started finishing up and packing everything that they wanted. And they pulled out my church shoes out of my bag and they took the shoestrings out. And I heard him say to the girls, you girls get up inside the van, sit inside the van. And Jenny got her two little girls and they went and sat inside the van. And they came over to us and they said, you guys turn over face down on the ground, put your hands behind your back. I thought, oh man, this is it. They're going to kill us. They're going to take the van and the girls and who knows what's going to happen to them. We rolled over in the brush and I put my hands back and they started tying us up with the shoestrings. And I leaned over my shoulder one more time and I begged. I said, please don't do it. Don't kill us. Don't do it. They didn't say much. They just finished tying us up. They went back to the van and got all the bags that they wanted, all the stuff that they wanted to take. They pulled out their guns and they said, all right, guys, we're going to leave. We're going to turn our backs and we're going to walk down this hill. And when we turn our backs, you guys had better not do anything stupid. You need to wait a good hour before you leave here. And when you do leave, you're going to pass a police station about a kilometer down the road. Don't you dare stop and report us. If you do, we'll hear about it. And we will track you down and we will kill you. It's a long road home to Honduras. And they grabbed their bags and they turned to leave. And that man stopped. And he looked back at me and he said, Eric, I like you. He said, I wish we could talk some more in a restaurant under other circumstances. I said, yeah. And I said, thank you so much for not killing us. And they disappeared down over the hill and got in some cars and they were long gone. We were left there in the woods. It was silent. And my heart sounded like a big bass drum in my ear. Boom, 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 boom. It was surreal. I peeked around to see if anybody was watching us, and I reached back and popped the strings off. He had barely even tied me. I untied Roberto. The girls were still sitting in the van, unharmed. And I tell you, with stuff strewn all over the floor of the van and all around that van, we stood and we had a service right there, and we thanked God for his mercy on our lives. You know, I truly believe that we're alive today because people, just like you, are praying for us every day. Churches like this church, who stands behind us in prayer. Prayer is a powerful thing. And we need to learn to pray and fast in these last days. God is still working and doing wonderful things. And I believe we could see so much more done for God, for Christ, if we would ask. We would show our interest by praying and fasting. May God help us. We're planning to return to the field next September. And we covet your prayers. We need your help. As you came into the service, you were handed prayer cards, pledge cards, and some envelopes. If you would like to be a financial supporter of our ministry on a monthly basis, sign the pledge card and let us know. Drop it in the offering at the end of the service. Or hand it to us. The prayer cards, please take that home. You put it on your refrigerator. Put it somewhere where you'll see it often. And be reminded to pray for the Coons family. The white envelope, I just want to explain real quick what that's for. We're raising funds for a vehicle. The Toyota that we've been running for the last 9 or so years is getting to be on its last leg. And we need to get something more dependable, a better vehicle. So we're raising funds to do that. If you'd like to help us with that project, Anything that goes in the white envelopes today will go towards the car project. So pray about that. But thank you so much for being here, and thank you for your attention. Thank you, brother, for allowing us to come, and God bless you abundantly.